attending tonight. This is the teleconference with Dr. Roger Yonka. My name is Rhonda Ritchie. I work with Dr. Yonka and with the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi. What I'm going to do is mute as a group now. And if you need to unmute to ask yourself a question, just do *6, and that will unmute it so you can talk. So right now I'm going to put us in listening mode. I have to make sure that Roger unmutes himself here. Okay, at this point I'd like to welcome Dr. Roger Yonka.
So greetings, friends. Sorry to make you wait. I hope you were doing your Qigong. And let's just take a moment here to take a deep breath and let me ring the gong just one time. I know everybody's busy, so we won't spend a whole lot of time practicing Qigong right now. We'll assume that you do that on a regular basis. For right now, a nice deep breath and relax. I hope that came through. Sometimes it's a little hard to tell how this is all going from the outgo side. I hope the income side on your side is going well and you're hearing me well enough. So, Rhonda, if you don't mind, Rhonda, I'm going to have you just remind me of the topics as we go, and then, of course, you can raise the questions as well. I think our first topic is this article and this kind of breakthrough on the Qigong and gene expression subject. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's the first item for the agenda.
All right. Now, I'm not sure that everyone was on the phone when Rhonda gave the web link for this, so let me just say it one more time. If you go to iiqtc.org, that's iiqtc.org, and then on the left-hand navigation bar, about halfway down, it says Qigong and Tai Chi Research. Once you get to the research page, go to the last link, and you should find yourself looking at a link for an article called 21st Century Breakthrough. And I'm now turning to that article. If you're not there yet, just say a few things about this, and you can read up on this later. About 6 weeks ago or so, I got an email from actually a number of different places regarding a study that was being released that was associated with someone that I have a lot of respect for, and that is Herbert Benson. Herbert Benson from Harvard, who is the person who originated the concept of the relaxation response, which is kind of like the opposite of the fight or flight response. One is a tension response, one is a release response, one is a go response, the other one is a rest response. And pretty soon, as you say those words over and over again, you think to yourself, oh my gosh, that's like yin and yang. Exactly. So the relaxation response in balance with the go part of our nervous system is healthy. If we're relaxed and taking good care of ourselves on occasion, then it's all the better if we happen to have some time in stress or go mode. Now, it turns out that Benson did this years ago, like 20 maybe more years ago, as the scientific capacity to be able to investigate this concept has been refining itself, we're now at this place, which I think my personal assessment is that this is the transformation now of Western healthcare. I didn't say Western medicine for a really important reason, because Western medicine is pretty much always going to be about managing risk and intervening in disease processes. So it's Western healthcare. That means caring for health. And we have now got this down to the point as a society and as a scientific community where we can look at mind-body practice, which includes a long list of things, including Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, meditation, prayer, breath practice, chanting, affirmations, and more. And all of those mind-body practices, to one extent or another, elicit the relaxation response. Now, that's kind of old hat. We knew that. What we didn't know is that this has an effect on our genes. And I'm going to read you a paragraph, which is a little ways down in here, if I can find it. And it goes like this. Probably the most compelling statement from the research by Dr. Benson on the findings of the study was, it is becoming increasingly clear that psychosocial stress can manifest as a wide system-wide perturbation of cellular process, generally increasing oxidative stress and promoting a pro-inflammatory milieu, meaning I don't feel good, I am sick. Stress-associated changes in the peripheral blood lymphocyte expression of single genes have been identified, meaning that stress has a repressive influence on the immune system. More recently, chronic psychosocial stress has been associated with accelerated aging at the cellular level, specifically shortened telomeres. I hope you'll look up telomeres. It's absolutely fascinating. Low telomerase activity, decreased antioxidant capacity, and increased oxidative stress are all correlated with increased psychosocial stress and with increased vulnerability to disease states. Now, these studies, the one that I've just talked about and two others that I'm going to talk about oh so very briefly, have basically proven, it goes like this. These three studies strongly suggest that mind-body practices, especially those that trigger the sustained and cumulative relaxation response effect, that is, a counter-stress effect, can prevent and ameliorate disease. This effect of mind-body practice on gene expression transforms the landscape of scientific exploration and launches an entirely new direction for the investigation of the emerging field of health maximization-based integrative medicine. That means integrative medicine based on health maximization. In other words, curing disease by getting healthy. That's basically what it's saying, is either preventing or curing diseases by simply getting healthy. No medicine required, because the medicine is in the body already. Now, let me just reflect on these three studies. It's amazing. The first one, Benson's study, genomic stress changes induced by the relaxation response. We just talked about that. Doing these practices creates a counter stress, which literally shifts the genes. This is incredible. Then the second study, there's actually been a fairly well done study on genomic profiling in Qigong. And the title of the paper is Genomic Profiling of Neutrophil Transcripts in Asian Qigong Practitioners, a Pilot Study in Gene Regulation by Mind-Body Interaction. And it's just amazing. I hope you'll go to it and read it. I'm not going to put a whole lot more into the details on this, except to say, conclusion of that Qigong study. Qigong practice regulates immunity, metabolic rate, and cell death, possibly at the transcriptional level. The study provides the first evidence that Qigong practice may exert transcriptional regulation at a genomic level. This is just so incredible. New approaches are needed to study how genes are regulated by elements associated with human uniqueness, such as consciousness, cognition, and spirituality. What a beautiful thing to see written in a scientific study. And then the third one, gene expression profiling in practitioners of Sudarshan Kriya. Sudarshan Kriya is basically a kind of Qigong from India, or you could say a kind of yoga from India, depending on how you like to look at things. And this one had a much bigger group of people associated with it. Health on it. It's absolutely fascinating. Here's the conclusion. Our pilot study suggests that the first evidence suggesting that these practices may exert effects on immunity, aging, cell death, and stress regulation through transcriptional regulation. So, you know, I'm not a scientist, you're not a scientist, but what this means is that Qigong and mind-body practice has just been elevated from where it was to where it will be going. Now, true, this is not about energy, but or qi. But then again, if you go to China, the Chinese don't really say that qi is energy. The Chinese say that qi is a multiplicity of things, including creativity, consciousness, breath, and energy. So, and as well as function. So we're really, this is like a, you know, one step for me getting off of the rocket ship on the moon, but a whole leap for mankind. You know, got to admit, I'm really biased to Qigong and mind-body practice. This is really important to me. But I think that as this rolls out into our schools, social service agencies, hospitals, the military, the justice system, it's going to be amazing. So we'll, most of the questions that we could answer, that we could ask about this, are questions that I am actually not equipped to answer, honestly. And so I hope you'll take a look at that paper, and we'll be sending out an email to everyone on this call that will give you that link, and you can read as much of it as you want to. Rhonda, let's go on to the next thing, because I'm concerned about the time a little bit.
Right. I've got you will get that link, and then also I found the definition of telomeres, so I'll include that link as well. The next piece of the agenda is the status of Qigong in China.
Oh, my gosh, what an interesting thing. I just had
with the Olympics coming up.
Exactly. So everybody's thinking about China right now. We're going to be confronted with it every day on every channel on Thursday. I just had lunch with someone who was saying to me, you know, wow, 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 China. I've just been watching the, you know, travel shows about China and how awesome and how interesting and what do you know about China? And then we get down to the question of, well, what's going on with Qigong in China? And it turns out that, we won't go too much into the details of Falun Gong. You can look that up, F-A, first word, second word, L-U-N, third word, G-O-N-G. Determined by the Chinese government to be a cult. Now, it's important for you to know that in every time a dynasty has fallen in China, it's almost always because of an uprising based on a renegade cult. Sometimes these are military cults, sometimes they're Buddhist cults, sometimes they're Taoist cults, sometimes they're just the angry people in relationship to taxes and farming and land share and all of that stuff. But when a cult gets a popular support over time, it can take down a dynasty, and that's how dynasties have gone down historically. So when the Chinese government discovered in 1999 that the Falun Gong cult had more members than the Communist Party, they panicked, of course, and did the classic action of a kind of political system that is, and went after that cult with a vengeance, killed a bunch of people, put people in jail, and basically shut Qigong down. And I know because I was there in early 1990s, 91, 92, 93, every year I was in China. Very, very, very robust Qigong activity. In 1999, when I was there, very robust Qigong activity, because it was I was there before the this event that happened in Tiananmen Square. When I went in 2000, the parks were empty. Literally. I mean, everybody was gone. The Tai Chi people gone, the Qigong people, the thousands and thousands of people that we assume are in the park every day, everybody was gone. The repression around Qigong was horrifying. Many innocent people were damaged in that process. Now, by the time it got to 2003 and 2004, people were coming back to the parks doing Tai Chi, simple forms of Tai Chi. And now it's back to the point where there's Qigong happening in the parks in a guarded sort of way. Now, the thing that happened in the meantime is all of this area, all of the fascinating links to Buddhism and Taoism and so forth, and all the links to Kung Fu, all of that has been pretty much removed except in the universities. So in other words, if you study Qigong and Tai Chi, historically, you can dig into the information, or if you're part of a physical education program and you investigate Qigong and Tai Chi, you'll find it there in the universities with some of its reflections on traditional principles and so forth, and some of the more esoteric and spiritual aspects of it. For a person to be allowed to teach a Qigong in the park in China, they actually have to register with the Ministry Sport. So Qigong is now presented as a sport as opposed to a personal cultivation practice that has any sort of spiritual association with it whatsoever. Now, everybody's spiritual life is private, so if you're aware enough to have a spiritual discipline, you can keep that secret and practice Qigong in any way you want to, but outwardly, there's very little public expression of deep and profound aspects of Qigong that we love so much. And so the state of Qigong in China is repressed. And the richness, the radical, radical richness, lives kind of quietly in the hearts and minds of those people who are teaching, in many cases, carefully, in other words, releasing esoteric information at a very slow rate. So the truth is that the state of Qigong in China relative to our romance and our fascination is somewhat modified. Now, just to be fair, we can say the mountains are still there in China, so when you go to practice Qigong in the mountains, you may run into people who are a little less limited and regulated, if you know what I mean. And the temples are still there, but to a certain extent, most temples in China are more like national parks or theme destinations as opposed to centers of spiritual activity. So the extent to which the Qigong that we love so much is alive and well in China is actually fairly significantly diminished relative to what we wish or hope. And in a way, it's kind of sad, but if we go to this next subject, I think that we'll get happy again. So, Rhonda, would you remind me of how we stated that?
Why the need for Qigong and Tai Chi teachers is on the rise, and how you can, as a Qigong practitioner, can position yourself for this trend. And we do have a few teachers that are certified teachers that are on the call, and people that have gone through Tai Chi Easy Facilitator and community practice leaders. So this is a relevant question for everyone, actually.
Yeah, and allow me to just take a moment to say to those of you who are teachers, I am now bowing to you for your willingness to share the richness of Qigong with. with people in your community, those people who are teachers from who graduated from our school. I send you a very enthusiastic wave with a peace sign, and I hope you are well and look forward to seeing you sometime soon. And if you're going to the National Qigong Association meeting in Baltimore, please give a hug to whoever you meet there for me. And then for those of you who are aspiring teachers, we will talk a little bit more about that, because we're actually enrolling a level one right now, and we'll have some Q&A at the end of this call about that. Now, just finishing up if Qigong has been somewhat modified in China, then where in the world where's the best place to learn Qigong these days? And for Americans, the best place to learn Qigong is America. And for Europeans, the best place to learn Qigong is in Europe. And for people in South America, the best place to learn Qigong is South America. And here's why. Because if you go to China with this idea of tapping into something deep and profound, you may find yourself somewhat frustrated, given what we just said about the current situation in China. And the qi is everywhere. That is the beauty. That's one of the great promises of qi. In my book, there are three promises of qi, and the first promise is qi is everywhere and qi is free. And so the whole idea of having to go someplace else to get at qi is, doesn't make any sense. It doesn't calculate, because qi is everywhere. So what makes it go is intent. So in other words, if I'm intent enough to be able to say to myself, I'm going to launch this day with a qigong practice, or if I'm intent enough to say to myself, even though I'm stressed out, I'm going to take a little qigong break, or if I'm intent enough to be able to say, wow, this was a really hard day or a really easy day, but to wrap this day up, I really want to quiet down and on purpose associate with the aspect of myself, which is well and, in fact, eternal. If I can take the time to connect with the aspect of myself that wasn't the busy person today, wasn't the person who worries in my life and feels like a victim, but the part of myself where I remind myself that I am eternal, that I am I'm irrevocably well at some level, that I have access to creativity even though I may feel exhausted in my personality, that my spirit has access to the universal energy, which is the energy that created the cosmos and the planet Earth and all the people on it. So it's about the intent. So if a person who knows very little about Qigong will just stop doing everything else and turn on that intent and allow themselves to practice whatever it is that they have within reach. So if they say, I don't know too much, well, good, then practice I don't know too much. I know a little bit, but I don't think I've got it right. Okay, well, I'm going to practice in a state of rest and as much in a state of the lack of self-judgment as possible, because self-judgment just turns off the healing capacity and causes stress and shortens the telomeres and turns off the qi. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, no matter what's going on in my life, I'm going to carve out a few minutes and I'm going to let myself drift into that beautiful, beautiful qigong and tai chi state where I'm not doing everything else. I'm not doing everything else. I'm just doing this. And I'm doing it because I've decided to. And because I've decided to, my intent is present. And because my intent is present and I am not distracted, the promise of qi, the glorious and gorgeous and beautiful and profound promise of qi, kicks in. And the natural capacity with a human system to maximize itself goes spontaneously. We don't have to figure out how to make it go, because it is already set to go if we'll just stop everything else. And so the capacity to stop everything else is based on the intent. Now, if I tell myself a story that says I don't know enough, then my intent will be deflated by my self-judgment. If I tell myself a story that if I don't get it right, it'll harm me or it'll make my teacher angry, then I've told myself a story that turns off, it trumps intent. It will be to have a way to tell yourself a story, to paint a picture in your mind, to give credence and relevance to a scenario that says, right now, no matter how little or how much I know, I am going to stop doing everything else, turn my attention to the present moment, drift into the awesome and eloquent state that the human system can reach when we stop everything else. And spontaneous healing occurs, spontaneous recovery of cell damage, spontaneous, apparently, spontaneous neutralization of cell death. Wow, that's amazing, is happening. It's not happening because we got it right. It's not happening because we tried really hard. It's happening because we said, okay, now I give myself permission to stop everything else, including my mind, which doubts, questions, fears, and judges. It's just beautiful. Okay, so that's the point about how the qi is everywhere. We can access qigong no matter where we are. And the fact that things are complex in China today doesn't matter because the qi is everywhere, and we're surrounded with people who know how to do qigong. There are people in communities all over the United States who know enough to begin to share with others. And there's a whole process in place to be able to give credibility to that person through a curriculum, whether it's the curriculum of the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, or otherwise. So the opportunity is this. I talked to somebody today who said, I've been doing yoga all my life. Now, you got to know, I do yoga every day. I wouldn't call it Indian yoga. I would call it Dr. Yanka's personal yoga. It comes from Taoist sources, Hindu sources, Buddhist sources, Christian sources, and fitness sources, and my own intelligence. So I do yoga every day. Now, this person was saying to me, I feel like the yoga that I've been teaching is really missing a lot of people because some people think that yoga is now a get beautiful fitness practice, and other people feel like yoga is something where you have to kind of bend and stretch, and they're stiff, and they don't feel comfortable doing it, and they don't have the right outfit, and they don't want to get on the floor and so forth. And so I want to study Tai Chi. And then this person didn't even know what Tai Chi is. I mean, the difference between Qigong and Tai Chi was zero in this person's mind. And to me, it doesn't really matter that much because Qigong, Tai Chi, yoga, they're all about the three intentful corrections, posture, body and posture, breath and mind. In fact, take just a moment to adjust your three intentful corrections, posture, breath, attention to the breath or deepening the breath, mind focus. I mean, we're pretty focused right now. You're probably listening to what I'm saying. So can you hold the focus if we be quiet for a moment? Well, today is not a day for being quiet. We're going to be more like chatty here. But let's just take one deep breath and be quiet. Adjust those three intentfuls, and I'll be right back. And if we can resist the urge to get busy worrying about what isn't, what is working, and who did us wrong, and who we owe an apology to, and what to do next to be able to survive, if we can just put that on hold, and stop everything and just do the practice, whether it's a moving practice or a still, quiescent practice. She does its thing, and spontaneous self-healing occurs, and stress reduction occurs, and gene expression literally shifts itself. We now know. It's amazing. So there's going to be, like, for instance, I just got back from Nebraska, where we trained 30 social service people and teachers from all over the western portion of Nebraska to go back to their communities and practice Tai Chi Easy, which is really just a very, very gentle, simple method of Qigong. Tai Chi Easy, a very simple method of Qigong. And they are so thrilled. I'm getting emails from these people out in the middle of these very unpopulated rural areas who are saying, you know, wow, I tried to lead a class. I didn't really know what I was doing, but everybody loved it. And they came up afterwards and said, oh, that was great. And some people even said, like, that's sort of like spiritual, like praying or something. So there we are in the Bible Belt. And people are doing Qigong, and they feel like it's praying. It's just a beautiful, beautiful story. So there is a lot of opportunity here, and it will continue to present itself, and we can talk more about that later. So thank you for listening to my rambles on all these things. I think it's absolutely fascinating. You know why I think it's fascinating? It's my job. It's my work. It's what I do. I hope it's been fascinating for you. Rhonda, let's go to a few questions.
Okay, I've divided the questions into categories. One is Qigong and Tai Chi and disease management. One is Qigong and Tai Chi and energy medicine. And one is Qigong and Tai Chi and instruction. I thought we'd do the instruction one closer to the end of the call because we'll be talking about the upcoming level one. So do you want the energy medicine one first or the disease questions first?
Oh, you just spin the wheel, and I'm ready for anything that comes up.
Okay, let's do the energy medicine questions first. I'm not going to mention the people who submitted them, but I'm going to email them later and say that, you know, we answered the question on the call so they can listen to it. This question comes from someone who teaches Pilates and yoga students. She says, I teach for the county, for hospitals, including the medical staff who have these concerns. How do you know that this qi is true? How do you know that these Chinese exercises have any influence on health? Could all these claims come from very poorly conditioned individuals and anything would help at this point? Or is it all in the mind?
Oh, yippee, I love the question. So let's work backwards. Number one, is it all in the mind? Well, if we look at the nature of mind, it's probably that's all there is. In other words, it may even be possible that there's no substance anywhere, that we just think we're experiencing being substantial beings. This is all, you know, like new physics and so forth. So that's that point. I'll go on to one more thing about the mind, and that is that the mind can heal the body for free. The mind can heal the body for free. So why would it be a problem that it's in the mind? I mean, that's the solution. So instead of thinking like, oh, the placebo, that's a problem. The person did that without any medication or any surgery. So let's say, you know, that's a problem. Well, no, that's not a problem. That's a solution. When you can teach people how to use the placebo on purpose, call that Qigong, purposeful placebo implementation would be another way to write that down. Somebody write that down. Purposeful placebo implementation is Qigong. So it's not a problem that it's in the mind. It's a solution that it's in the mind. Now, are these people conditioned? Yes, of course they're conditioned. That's what cultivation means. Cultivating one's capacity, another, write that down, cultivating capacity, that's another translation for Qigong. Cultivating capacity isn't a problem, it's a solution. So when people in hospitals ask questions which are really defense of their own lack of information and their own lack of creativity, That's not the problem of the person answering the question. That's the problem of the person asking the question. So the person who's the Pilates, who asked this this beautiful question, what I would say to those people, let's go to the next piece of this, is that there are mountains of research, absolutely mountains of research. So in other words, this is not just some sort of foreign exercise that has absolutely no relevance. And if you'll stay tuned to the IIQTC over the next months and years, you will have your mind blown. If some of you already know this, the literature on Tai Chi and Qigong is huge. I'm writing an article right now with University of Arizona, Dr. Larkey, who's one of our graduates of our program. And we have a review article that we're just finishing up that will surely be published. We have another article that just got published or got accepted for publication. And Rhonda, if you'll write down a note, ask Dr. Larkey if we can share this article with people now instead of them having to wait until it comes out. We could maybe be able to send you this article or send you a link on the article that we just got accepted for publication at the Journal of Physical Activity and Health. The point is that when somebody says there's no literature, no research literature on Qigong and Tai Chi, that person is basically targeting themselves as an uninformed person in a defensive posture rather than an informed person in an open posture. So I wouldn't suggest that Pilates person or anybody get nervous about people who ask questions like that, because the first thing that you know is that they're not even paying attention. They're not reading the literature. And with this new article, these three studies that I just sent this little article out on, you have got the most beautiful and eloquent research ever done by the human race on Qigong, right there. It's just gorgeous. So, Rhonda, back to you. Next question.
Next question is another energy medicine question, but it also has to do with just like where we are in this century. It says, are ancient ways that we have either disappeared or lost starting to reemerge in today's world? And does the sudden drive to study the energy arts, such as Qigong and Tai Chi, have to do with the coming of 2012?
Haha, 2012, I love it. Oh, boy. I think here's my take on 2012, and I've studied this fairly deeply. And as I understand it, on that date, in December, the position of the sun in its relationship with the something that migrates, I'm not an astrologer and I'm not an astronomer, so I don't know this thing, but it's the precession of equinoxes. That's it, the precession of equinoxes. What happens is that over a period of thousands of years, equinoxes change, so do solstices, in a very slight sort of way. And there's a point at which the sun, in its precession of the equinoxes, lands in a particular part of the Milky Way according to the Mayans. Now, it's really important for you to understand that we make a calendar every year that we put on our wall, but somebody somewhere is plotting when is going to be the equinox, what date of the year is the equinox going to be in the year 2025? What about 2050? Now, people are somewhere calculating calendars going forward. Now, we have record-keeping systems and communication systems that are different than existed in those early times. And when the Mayans got together, got all the wizards together, all the great Qigong masters together, all the star watchers together to compare notes, they would create a calendar for a number of hundreds of years. Now, this is a society that existed for not thousands of years, but 40,000 years. In other words, a prehistoric, meaning previous to the common history, written history of the humans of today, those histories were carved into stone and often called calendars. And they were often called stones of power and stones of knowledge. And you go to these societies and you dig through the rubble and you find these stones and they have information on them and so forth. It's important for you to understand that it probably would have been true that the Mayans would be meeting, the Mayan wizards of calendars and et cetera, would have probably been meeting about, probably around 200 years ago, no, maybe let's say 150 years ago, to be able to reset the calendar beyond 2012. But they never had the meeting. Why? Well, it's history. Spanish show up. They're particularly interested in gold. They kill a lot of people violently. They also give them syphilis and influenza and kill off huge amounts of people. Plus the fact that these people weren't always getting along with each other, so they were killing each other even sometimes. So that's the 2012 piece. Now, I'm not afraid of 2012. I think that it's a beautiful portal to 2013. And I'm prepared. I've got rice and water in my storage here because we have earthquakes in California and et cetera. So it's not just 2012 that's driving me. It's my intent to be a careful and practical citizen of the society that I live in. Now, back to the question of the energy arts. People start to study all kinds of things during different eras because of different situations. Right now, in our society, the American society, we are still in, though it looks like it may be deconstructing to a certain extent, we're still in a golden era. We've been building universities and refining technologies in this society for over 200 years, and a lot is going on. And so just like in the Tang Dynasty, T-A-N-G, from the year 1600 to the year, from the year 600 to the year 900, the Tang Dynasty, the longest existing dynasty in the history of the Chinese culture, only 300 years. Most dynasties are more like 25 years or 40 years, the life of literally one emperor. The Tang Dynasty had a number of emperors, and during that dynasty, there was a renaissance in everything. Medicine, art, agriculture, astronomy, sailing ships on the sea and knowing where you are, all of it. Why? Because they had time to get over the violent struggles and the pioneering. In our culture, we were just pioneering like a couple of years ago. In California, where I live, people didn't even show up here until 1850 and 1870. That's only like a couple of hundred years back. So the point is that when we have the time to get back to the deeper knowledge, we get back to the deeper knowledge. And in our society, we've had that time. I don't believe that we do these things out of panic and paranoia because there's problems arising. I think that we do these things because we have time on our hands. We have the liberty in our lives to pursue something besides food and shelter. And there may be a very intimate relationship between 2012 and the energy arts, but I would expand the picture and say that the renaissance in the energy arts today has to do with the fact that bunches of us have been to China, bunches of us are writing books, we have a health cost crisis, and we need to do something about it. And people are interested in more than just work. They want to have an inner life, and they want to know the truth about their total being, which is that you've got a body, but you also have an energy field, and we're fascinated with that right now. And it's good. It's a very good timing and lots of fun. And, I mean, don't you love it? It's just... for us to have this, we were having a debate the other day. Who's got it better? Somebody who reached maturity in the 40s That is someone who fought in the Second World War, lived through the 1950s, went shopping, had a hula hoop, etc. Is that a better life than someone who lives in the 2005 through 10, where we're shopping a little less, many of us are shopping a little less, and we're turning our attention to the richness of our inner life? I've definitely got a bias to the inner, the energetic, and so forth. So I share your interest in these things, and thank you so much for asking. Rhonda, back to you.
Okay, the next top area is Qigong, Tai Chi, and disease management. One person asked, in a teleconference that you held about a year ago, I heard that Tai Chi would be preferable for that as opposed to Qigong for somebody with Parkinson's or any nervous system disorder. Can you clarify this and explain why?
Yeah, this is a much, much longer question than we're going to have time to answer, but it's a beautiful question, and I'm so glad that it has been asked. Allow me to say this. The simple practices, that is any kind of Tai Chi that is very simple, could mean that you're doing Tai Chi without the walking steps, could mean that you're doing sitting Tai Chi, could mean that you're doing a version of Tai Chi like Tai Chi Easy that has five movements, it could mean that you're doing a brief Tai Chi that's a little longer than Tai Chi Easy like the integral Tai Chi that is a part of our curriculum. In all cases, when the practice is relatively easy, then what happens is that you can stop thinking. I'm going to use the word cognating. You can stop cognating and relax into a kind of very, very simple, maybe even very habitual practice. But what it does is it takes you into a very deep state of relaxation. So Qigong and simple Tai Chi, and some Qigong is complex, so we're not talking about that. Simple Qigong and simple Tai Chi allow a person to switch everything off, stop doing everything else, and just rest in the practice. I turn on that capacity to neutralize cell death, to turn off that natural stress-based process of basically, you know, shortening our lives, and turn on the counter-stress mechanism, which shifts gene expression. I'm using the language of this new article, an array of articles, but we could say also turning on the energy, liberating the energy from its constraints and so forth. But in all cases, the simple practices allow you to get out of complexity directly, immediately, and stop cognating and go directly to a kind of an open association with the present moment only. Beautiful. Now, more complex forms of Qigong and more complex forms of Tai Chi demand cognition and cognizing, meaning that you have to think and you have to coordinate. And it's not a stress-free experience. It's not a stress-free experience. And so while learning, now it's not as stressful as being down on yourself. It's not as stressful as being caught in traffic. It's not as stressful as opening your bills and feeling like you're a victim of some kind of a conspiracy to make your life horrible. Learning Tai Chi and putting yourself under the stress of learning is very different than being under the stress of self-judgment or violence or et cetera. So what happens is that you're in a relatively stress-free environment and you're learning and you're cognating, you're cognizing. And it requires a different part of the self to be able to learn something new. So there's a very different set of influences in play. Now, the person who made the comment on the last call was reflecting on one thing only. He was giving a reflection based on some insights of a couple of researchers. One researcher is a guy named Shin Lin, S-H-I-N space Lin, Xin Lin, a researcher from the University of California, really smart guy, very, very likable, very lovable, deep, interested in the deep aspects of Qigong and Tai Chi, but also doing very practical research. And his findings were that when you learn Tai Chi, which is typically longer and more complex, it causes the body to have to think more. And he was speculating that the increase in cognition may, not does, absolutely, but may have a positive influence on neurological disorders like Parkinson's disease. Now, I would say, in addition to that, that simple practices, which allow you to stop thinking, have another positive effect. So that's two kinds of positive effects. They're different. And I hope I articulated that well enough so that you could understand what I was saying. And by the way, we have a few very direct associations with people who practice Qigong and Tai Chi, who have Parkinson's type syndromes. And so far what we see is that this is very, very positive. So if the question is, like, what should I do because I've got Parkinson's, or I know someone that's got Parkinson's, then the answer is do Qigong to be able to get that benefit, do simple practices to get that benefit, and then learn something new to get that benefit. Do both of them in a state of relaxation, self-acceptance. Keywords, do both of them in a state of relaxation and self-acceptance, also sometimes called the Qigong state. Rhonda, back to you.
Well, the last question under concerning Qigong and Tai Chi and disease comes from a person who's asking about integrating Qigong and Tai Chi for dysphagia, which I guess is difficulty in swallowing. I had to look that up. Stroke and aphasia and voice disorder. So that was, it was a brief question. It's kind of a multifaceted question.
Well, we'll let it be multifaceted because for one reason, because in Western medicine, we name the subparts of everything, and we very rarely look at something in its whole nature. So first, I want to acknowledge that all of those diagnostic points that you mentioned that the questioner asked, they're all aspects of neurological dysfunction often triggered by stroke. Now, it is, I think, beyond this point, not valuable to think of all those things as separate, but instead to think of them as aspects of an area function which has to do with moving the body, moving the tongue, moving the, you know, being able to do the breath, etc. And how could Qigong and Tai Chi help that? And it really goes to some of the same stuff that we were talking about regarding the Parkinson's syndrome or diagnostic category, which is that first, learn simple practices that require little cognition. Because what that does is it floods the human system with medicine, naturally occurring internal health healing resources called the medicine within or the healer within. So we want to flood the system with healing resources first. Then over time, maybe right away, or maybe later in the session, or maybe later, like in a couple of months, we would add kinds of Qigong and Tai Chi that have some more requirements of our capacity to think and coordinate. So in the beginning, we don't want to have to think, and we don't want to have to coordinate, because a person with a stroke recently or any other reason why they have these asias, you know, these dysphasias and aphasias, to be able to have to coordinate and think about how to coordinate and to cognate and make the connections to be able to coordinate, they're going to be out of reach. And so what we want to do is we want to make medicine, flood the system with healing resources, do that with Qigong, with a lot of self-forgiveness and a lot of grace and a lot of positive, yes, sort of, wow, this is great kind of feeling, getting into the present moment and so forth. And either later in the practice on that day or even later in the month or later in the year, start to add in very simple practices that require greater cognition and greater coordination. And just in the interest of time, I'm going to leave it there, but I think you know what I'm saying, and I think it's a great question. And the best way, by the way, the way that trumps everything is to do Qigong before you have a stroke so that you know how to do it in case you have an accident, whether it's a car accident, a cerebrovascular accident, a cardiac infarction type accident. In other words, after you've had the medical event, it's a little hard to learn Qigong. If you've learned Qigong before you lost your well-being and your coordination, then it's easier to bring Qigong in as a as a healing methodology, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean. So thanks, Rhonda. Now, let's see. What's the next one? And by the way, let me make a statement to folks here. At 5:30, we don't expect that people should stay on the line. We're going to answer a couple of more questions. After we answer those questions, we're going to turn off the mute and turn this into a little bit of a question and answer session. But don't everybody try to jump in at once. But, you know, usually it's kind of like that. You wait to get your question in a little bit. So be prepared to be involved in the fact that everybody's doing it this at once, because that's just how it happens. Okay, Rhonda, next question.
Although the last question is a great segue into talking about teacher training, one of our readers says, can you really learn Qigong well without an instructor? There are no instructors geographically close to my home, and I wish to learn to heal myself and then become a teacher. There are no close schools for instruction without major travel, so how can I pursue this without individual instruction?
Yeah, good. It's such an excellent question. And wow, is there debate about this one. And now, this is a point of view. It is not intended to be perceived as a truth. I think most of you will perceive it right away as a sort of a renegade thought anyway. And it goes like this. The qi is free. That's the first rule. First promise. The first healing promise of qi is that qi is everywhere and qi is free. So for us to somehow talk ourselves into the idea that we have to go somewhere to get this to work is it doesn't make any sense. The second healing promise of qi is if you practice, you will benefit. Now, that doesn't say if you practice, you'll get $1 million tomorrow. It doesn't say if you practice, you will be spontaneously healed in 9 seconds. I say 9 because it's a power number in the Chinese tradition. Or 9 times 9, 81. You won't be healed. You may not be healed in 81 seconds, but you could be. But here's what the promise says. If you practice, you will benefit. So now we're thinking, okay, practice is, I can do it without going anywhere. And practice is fairly promised. Practice is great because I'm going to get some kind of benefit, whatever it is, and whatever order the benefit shows up. Third healing promise of qi is qigong is easy if you let it be.